Welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I'm Chris Lorton, your host again today. And with me, I have a friend of mine, known each other for a while, Scott Mandrell. Welcome, Scott.
Good morning, Chris.
Yes, and Scott, you're Edwards Jones, financial advisor. Right?
That is correct.
Been doing it for how many years?
Five here in Godfrey now.
Yes, and you have your show here on WJBM, Mandrell on Money.
Which I appreciate.
Oh, that's, we love having you. It's fun. I listen all the time, you know, try to get those tips.
Well, I hope others are as well.
Yes. And how long have you been doing this as far as advising?
For the last 5 years. I taught engineering prior to that, and I had decided to retire from engineering, and my wife had been with Jones for quite some time, and I had been actually in the Jones family, as it were, for quite some time, and they had been on me about taking on this role, and finally the opportunity presented itself, and so I took over a couple of branches here in the area.
You got a little side gig going on down in Grafton. What's going on down there?
Well, it's not really a commercial enterprise, but we are. I have, for a lot of people who might know me around the area, my interest in history in particular, and there was a property that was owned a long time by a local family here in the area that is down on the River Road near the confluence of the Illinois and the Mississippi Rivers, just outside of Grafton. And my wife and I have taken on the challenge of trying to preserve and restore that piece of historic property.
Cool. You find yourself down there quite a bit?
We are down there all the time. If I, when I get done with my investment day, as it were, I make my way to Grafton, and in fact, this week we're putting in fencing. We're fencing for horses right now.
Oh,
and
cool.
And
cool.
And all that stuff.
So. Yeah, horses, love horses. A labor of love, horses are.
It has to be. It has to be love, because it's certainly not very sensical.
Now, as far as finances, financial advising, let's just talk about a few things. A lot of people already know this, but yeah, maybe you hear a lot of it. But for example, bear market, bull market.
Right.
Just give me the skivvy on that.
Okay. Well, so the term bulls and bears actually comes from well over 100 years ago. There were people involved in investing who would lean in different directions. They would essentially investing with the in anticipation of strong returns. And there were actually a group of people that this actually emanated from, these types of investors who actually were, if you will, and I hate to use the term betting, but they were essentially betting against companies. Also, they were anticipating downturns in particular stocks or things like that, and those were referred to as bears. And over the years, those terms bull and bear really became used in a wider way to talk about sort of the general direction in which the market was leaning, or the sentiment that people had about the market at the time. It is now actually, however, there are some actual metrics that are used to determine what is a bull or bear market.
Now, a question: how do you invest against something?
Well, even today, there are ways in certain vehicles in the investment world that will allow people to essentially, and again, I'm loath to use the word bet, but it's sort of appropriate in this case, where you're sort of betting against a stock. You might be shorting a stock or something where you anticipate that it's going to fall, right?
Right.
So you're actually, that's part of your strategy. Today, when we talk about a bull market or a bear market, really what we're talking about is in particular, a bear market. A bull market is when we have confidence in the market, that the market is in an upswing and that sort of thing. A bear market is actually defined by a 20% decline in the valuation of the market at that time. So let's say that you had if today the market were to drop by 20%, that would trigger a actual determination and a labeling of that moment as entering into a bear market.
We've kind of been in a bull market.
We have been for the last 3 years almost.
And we have talked before, and you've said that the market will correct. It always corrects. Explain that, the correction of the market.
Right. So there's a couple of ways to think about it. And if you think about a ratchet wrench, right, every once in a while it's got to go back to get another bite.
Yeah.
Right. We've all heard the term buy low, sell high. Right. Well, you can't buy low if it's always high.
Right.
Right. So what oftentimes happens is that there is and what is the market? I think it's important for us to talk about that. First of all, we have the stock market, but we also have the bond market. Okay. Mm-hmm. When we have these conversations like we're doing right now, we're generally speaking about the stock market rather than the bond market.
Okay.
So what is the stock market, right? It is this amalgamation of all of these different companies that are publicly traded. So it's this vast and amorphous thing, but really ultimately I would argue that it comes down to consumers. It's us. It's us going out and buying cheeseburgers and buying a new car and a new pair of Levi's or housing starts, right? Building new homes and how that.
It's where we have money to spend.
Say that again.
That we have money to spend.
We have money to spend, and we're investing, whether that be for short-term desired, consumer goods, or maybe it's long-term things, consumer cyclical things. So there's a host of different things that constitute what the market is. When consumers are confident and they're buying and they're investing and they're doing that, that tends to be what we would consider a bull market. When the market declines, and we talk about it being a bear market, that's generally a reflection of people pulling back, of anxiety or concern about the state of things. Now, I have used this analogy before, and it may or may not click with everyone, and it may not be appropriate in everybody's mind, but using the horse analogy that we were talking about.
The horse analogy.
Talking about horses. Yes. I always tell people that, the horse, I love the horse. It's a beautiful horse. And it's like, it is a beautiful horse. They're wonderful. But the reality is that a horse is a 1,000-pound animal with a brain the size of a walnut constantly trying to commit suicide. That is a horse. It's going to try to hurt itself. And so you as a horse owner or trainer, you need to anticipate that, and you make sure that the stall is safe, that the fencing is safe.
Yeah, if you've ever had horses, you got to watch horses because they will find a way to hurt themselves.
They're going to find a way to hurt themselves.
They do.
Right? The market, similarly, has attributes that are akin to that, which are the market wants to grow, right? The market is a place where we people want to invest, people want to spend their money, we're a consumer society, and capitalism is a wonderful thing. It's brought more people out of poverty than any other system in the history of humankind.
Right.
But every once in a while, we get nervous, we get anxious, we get concerned, and there are things that just as human beings, we have sort of common sense. This is too good to be true. It's going on. This period of growth is not sustainable. It's been going on for a long period of time. And we recognize that as individuals, we recognize it. Certainly as financial professionals, we are purposely looking for those indicators. Oftentimes people will attribute the downturn in the market to a particular event. And this is where I think a little bit with the horse analogy. I want to say, the reason why the horse hurt himself was because of that fence. Well, no, the reason the horse hurt himself was because he's a horse.
And he ran into the fence.
And he ran into the fence, right? So the market, a lot of times, is looking to correct. I believe this wholeheartedly, that the market is always looking for an excuse to correct. When there is a political event, a war, some other factor that is very high profile, oftentimes we will see a market correction take place in and around that time frame.
Are you saying that people are spending, they're having a good time, everything's royal, and then all of a sudden something happens and it changes the way they think, and they quit spending?
And sort of, yeah. That would be a fair way of looking at it. But in
they
that
get
moment,
scared.
They do, and oftentimes in that moment they will point at the thing that happened recently in the news, and certainly we have a news cycle today that offers them plenty of opportunity, right, to have doom and gloom,
right?
And so it will point to something going on in the news And they will attribute, and then we or the media and society collectively will point and say, well, the reason why the market dropped was because of that thing that happened. When in reality, the market was probably looking for a reason to correct, and that thing offered the excuse for the correction. If that's a slight nuanced difference in a way of looking at it. Mm-hmm. But I'll give you an example of that particularly.
Before you
yes,
uh-huh. go on, is I just want to let everybody know, in case you joined us, I have Scott Mandrell with me with Dow Jones, no, with
Edward Jones.
Right, Eddie Jones, out of Godfrey. And he also does our Mandrell on money. So go ahead, continue.
So again, I was saying it's sort of a nuanced difference, but there is this. Rather than looking at why that the market dropped because of this news event, understand that sometimes the market is dropping for intrinsic and inherent reasons that are reasons that are generated because of market cycles, and oftentimes those events in the news are used as excuses, or at least they're markers for why that happened. And I'll give you the example I might give here would be. Two bear markets ago, 2018, okay? The big correction in 2018 came at the midterm election in 2018.
Okay.
But I would just for a moment, you know, have you consider, right, that in that moment, those people weren't sworn into office until the following year. But when that election took place, right about that time, the market was sort of bloated. There was a change in control of the House, mm-hmm. and there was a deep correction in the market. Okay, so 2018 was a natural bear market. 2020 was an artificial bear market. It only lasted for about a month during COVID. We had a bear market in 2020, but it was very quick. It was over very quickly, and we were back on an ascension and a rising period right there. 2022, there was a bear market in 2022. We finished 2021 at an all-time high. We went into 22. We started to have a slide in the market, mm-hmm. and the market started to decline in the early part of that year. We were further complicated that year because of the rapidity with which interest rates were raised and how that affected the bond market. Mm-hmm. So it was sort of a 1-2 punch. And that had not happened really since about 1979 and 80 under the Carter administration, where we'd seen interest rates raise that much. So it was but it's part of a cycle. In fact, the bear market that happened in 2022 lasted about 7 months, which is on par with about an average length of a bear market in the last 100 plus years of data that's associated with that. That was 2022. Well, I had mentioned before that in 2018 had been a natural bear market, sort of cyclically speaking. Bear markets happen on average about every 4 years. Okay, it's mm-hmm. not precisely 4 years. It can be a little longer, it can be a little shorter, but that's a fair rule of thumb to think about bear markets happening every 4 years.
Is there a reason for it, or just that's what happens? It's just history.
That's the data. You know, we can introduce a lot of, you know, thoughts about why that's the cycle. And I'm sure that there are people who have studied this much more in depth than I have, and you know, economists and all who might want to make arguments one way or the other. But the data demonstrates that about every 4 years, what we know is that almost every year we have about 3-5% corrections. Every year we have generally, I mean, on average, about 1-10% correction. But then about every 4 years we have a correction that is about 20% and more. And that is what defines, officially, if you will, defines a bear market, is a 20% or more correction and a negative movement in the market. So that's what we want to be careful about, right? And so that's one of the things we've been talking a lot about lately.
And What should an investor think about? What should they be doing with their whoever they're helping?
Well, first of all, they should not be terrified, and they should not. It is not the sky is not falling. It does not mean that we're having a zombie apocalypse. It just simply means that there is a correction. Oftentimes, what happens is, you know, we talk about the market being controlled by two human factors: one, greed, and one, fear.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we tend to, that pendulum tends to swing. And it swings to an extreme, and then it starts and swings back the other way. And so when people say, well, I'm concerned about a pending correction, that I'm concerned about there being a bear market in the near future. Well, then do something about it if possible. And I would certainly talk to your financial advisor, whoever you're working with. But I would say don't start from a position of panic. Start from a position of knowledge. And this is where I think people have a tendency to overthink some things. It's easy to get into the weeds, and there's nothing wrong with getting into the weeds of particular securities, about how certain portfolio styles might perform, all of those sorts of things. But don't forget the overarching fundamental aspects of how the market works. And again, part of that is indeed that there's this cyclical nature to it. So if you know that there is a bear market coming, look at what your particular circumstance affords you with regard to steps that might be taken to mitigate that coming storm, if you will. In some cases, that might mean looking at rebalancing or reallocating some of the securities you have. In other cases, it might be looking at adjusting, particularly in maybe a managed account. It might mean looking at possibly realigning your portfolio objectives and reallocating more things to bonds over stocks. So that's something that is very much a personal decision based upon your individual circumstances and what you and your advisor have built out as a strategy. But it shouldn't be – the key, I would argue, is to not be flat-footed. I talk to people about this all the time. There tends to be sort of a set-it-and-forget-it mentality a little bit, right? That we're going to – we've developed a great portfolio for you, and there it is. But that doesn't mean that portfolio needs to remain static indefinitely, because as market dynamics take place and things change – it probably makes sense for you to be reviewing those accounts and looking at places where you can make moves that would either take advantage in an up market, would take advantage of that up market, or in the case of a pending down market, guard against that downturn.
So we know probably a bear market's coming, right?
It
most
is.
Most likely, according to data.
Statistically speaking, it would not be a surprise if it
yeah.
did.
Right. So you should think more conservatively. Is that what you're saying? Maybe?
Yes, perhaps. Maybe thinking about, is there a way to move some of my assets to a less volatile environment so that they're less susceptible to a downturn? I would say this, and I try to talk to my clients about the fact that we are rarely able to completely avoid the downturn. Right. I mean, if you're in the market, you're probably going to experience some correction. The goal is to minimize that.
Yeah.
We talk a lot about 3 years up, 1 year down. We talk a lot about three steps forward, one step back, right? We use those sort of visual ideas. I would argue that if you've taken the three steps forward, and we anticipate that there's about to be a step back.
Yes.
Is there a way maybe to consider stepping out of the line for a moment off to the side or maybe taking a smaller step backwards? Because what we see a lot of is in 2021, when the market was at its all-time high at that time, that a lot of – and we look at lots of accounts and, a lot of folks had a loss in 2022 that was commensurate with their gains in 2021, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then in 2023, they had gains commensurate with their loss in 2022. But the problem with that is if you have $100,000 and you have a 20% loss, you're down to $80,000.
Right.
But then if you have a 20% gain on $80,000.
You're just back where you started.
You're not back to where
you started. Oh,
you're not back to where you started.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, you're what?
You're shy of it a bit, right?
A little bit.
So then that time frame to get back to where you were is actually a little bit more than a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the argument is to try to minimize that step backwards so that when we start moving forward again, your point of origin for that next rising period is a little higher than it would have been if you had just been idle and sat by and let it happen to you, right?
Right.
So I guess the argument would be to be proactive and understand that accounts do need to be managed. You do need to have a strategy in place. We talk to clients a lot about, when we talk about risk tolerance, what would you do if? Because we're trying to get clients to consider what it means what would their emotional response be, if perhaps, to a downturn in the market, right? And there is a question we'll ask sometimes about, one of the responses might be, I wouldn't do anything. I would continue with my strategy. In terms of, well, if you have a strategy in place that anticipates all of this happening, that's probably the right answer. I would stay the course, right, with my strategy. That's if your strategy anticipates doing something about the potential of a downturn. That is different than saying, I'm not going to do anything.
I'm
just going to ride it out.
Yeah.
Okay? And age has a lot to do with that. If you're 40, riding it out may not have such a long, an impact over time. However, if you're 65, okay, and you're on the or 60 and you're at the doorstep of retirement, you don't want to have to maybe go through that downturn and then have to burn another year and a half recovering from that downturn, right? And so I would just encourage everybody at this time to really be thoughtful and understand that, again, statistically speaking, historically speaking, we've had three great years. It might be time to, to make sure you're having a conversation with your financial advisor and considering what you might do to guard against, a potential downturn that might be on the horizon in the near future.
Well, I think that's some good advice.
I hope that,
because
I hope
it seems like every day on the news, it's a record-breaking market today, next day, same thing. It just keeps going up and up and up, which is great.
Right.
But
there's a saying, I guess, or a phrase that we joke about a little bit, but not really in a ha-ha way, more of like a, just reminding ourselves to not fall prey to this. But you will hear people say, but it's going to be different this time.
Yes.
It's going to be different this time, Chris.
Yes.
But you know what? It rarely is.
Rarely.
It rarely is. That's why, and the statistical evidence, we are not a crystal ball business. We are a statistical business. We deal in statistics. We deal in data. That's what informs decisions that we make. And, I guess there's a bit of intuition and a little gut, and a little knowledge that is gained over time doing this. But data is the reliable source of informing decision making. And the reality of it is, and this isn't, again, we're talking about very straightforward stuff here. I mean, I've had clients Google, they hear me going on about this, and I think sometimes it's just like Scott's giving he's talking. I'm gonna, and they've Googled it themselves. I mean, anybody can Google, what's the average interval, or how often do we have a bear market? And it's going to be, somewhere in the neighborhood. 3.7 years, close to 4. You'll see different numbers, but it's going to be roughly 4 years.
Okay. That sounds like good advice. Yeah. I appreciate you coming in today. It's been very educational again. That's what I have in here, educational.
That's right. And I would say this, if your advisor is not talking to you about this.
Give him a call.
Give me a call.
Oh, give you a call. All right. And you'll talk to them about it.
Well, somebody should be, and that this is not, it's easy to be kind of lighthearted about it here, but the reality of it is this is people's life savings, it's their retirement, it's very, very serious things, and people should take it seriously. And if you're working with someone who's not providing you with the guidance and the information necessary to make good decisions, you should seek out someone who does.
Yeah, and we were talking a little bit before we came on the air, and we just are about to run out of time, but you told me that you have clients in 18 different states.
That is correct.
That's crazy.
And many of them were folks who maybe were originally from this area and whatever life took them in different directions. Also, we have just sought out clients that are ideal for our particular work that we do in other states.
Well, thanks for coming in, and have a great day.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate you having me.